It's Thomas Logan here from Equal Entry and Kim Nakata from Converge Accessibility. Looking forward to discussing a new case today for our Alley Insights podcast. A small business in Maine started receiving letters from attorneys in New York, according to a story from a local news site in Maine. This case is interesting in the idea that there's really not a company doing business on the web now that is avoiding the potential risk of an accessibility lawsuit. We thought it would be interesting to discuss this case because it's a very small company that's having to deal with this accessibility claim. And this particular case came from plaintiff Andrew Toro, who couldn't buy a t-shirt on the website of a product site called Lisa Marie's Made in Maine. The defendants, Lisa Marie's Made in Maine, paid $9,000, and now that's the resolution. Ken, what does that actually mean for them to settle for $9,000? How does that affect them in the future?
For the future, all it does is just settle this particular case. So Andrew Toro basically is dropping this claim of discrimination for this particular instance. It won't prevent Andrew Toro from coming back to sue the website again, and it also doesn't prevent any other plaintiff from doing the same thing. So in all likelihood, a plaintiff from down the street could just as easily go and sue Made in Maine tomorrow.
Yeah, so having to pay $9,000 and really not getting any resolution to actually improving the accessibility of your site is not something I feel good about. And when you think about what it costs to make the site actually work or fix the issues, it's probably going to be similar amounts. And it's definitely going to be within the scope of avoiding future lawsuits. Definitely something to be thinking about for companies that are choosing to settle these if it's easily come back to them again with a different plaintiff. What's the point of having that be your resolution? You're gambling with the fact that no one might come back to you, but they easily could.
I think that's right, Thomas. They did a cost-benefit analysis, basically, and I think that they assumed that they're not going to get sued tomorrow by another plaintiff. But there are other companies that get sued constantly, and so obviously those companies, which have a lot of public exposure, they really need to think about web accessibility a lot more seriously.
Another detail in the article from the Maine website was about commentary from two lawyers from Seyfarth Shaw, Christina Lani and Min Vu, and they were discussing about how many different lawsuits have been appearing and the fact that there is some requests from the defendants in these types of cases to be able to have better clarity on how they can be notified about accessibility issues on their site. Ken, what's your opinion about legal notification as it relates to the ADA?
I don't think that's going to go through. Over the last couple of decades, there have been a number of attempts to create a notification requirement in the ADA, and they've always failed. And every time that this issue's come up, the plaintiffs have argued, and I think justifiably, that requiring notification is unfair because this is a basic civil right that they have, and you shouldn't have to notify somebody to do basic things that are right, and making sure your website is accessible is one of those things. In general, I don't give a whole lot of credence or faith to the idea that the notification requirements are ever going to end up being built into the ADA.
Maybe one thought for me too on the technology side is that in reality, as we sit here today, it's pretty much you can go to most websites and find accessibility issues. We've discussed that in other episodes as well. So from a notification standpoint, as a tech person, it's like, okay, well then just notify everyone straightforward that hey, your site's not accessible, because we almost always see that. So that would be my other thought on if that did even happen to go through. Well, you could pretty easily do the notification in a simplified way, just using an automated tool. And as we've discussed, automated tools don't do everything, but they are clear showing violations. And we can find violations easily on almost every website.
That's true.
Can we talk about some of the weaknesses in this case then, Ken? What do you think are some weaknesses?
Oh, absolutely. I think there are a number of weaknesses in this case. The biggest one is that a small company in Maine is getting sued by a serial plaintiff in Manhattan, which is where the Southern District of New York is. because the small little company in Maine probably does barely any business in New York. So why are they getting hauled into court in New York City to defend themselves? And the reason is because of something that we call personal jurisdiction. And that really comes down to what presence does Made in Maine have? And the courts in this area have been pretty lenient, but not terribly lenient in what they look at. And most of it is, how many sales do they have in New York? It's not just the fact that Andrew Toro was trying to buy a t-shirt. It's looking at, instead, how many sales does Made in Maine have cumulatively in the Southern District of New York. And even though Maine is a popular vacation spot for a lot of New Yorkers, I just can't imagine that Lisa Marie's Made in Maine does a huge amount of business. So there's that. And also, the Southern District where this case is being brought is really, really tough on serial plaintiffs. And it requires them to show a clear intent to return to the site and take advantage of their business. And that's not very clear to me from this complaint. So in that sense, I think that if they wanted to fight this case, they could have easily had this case dismissed. But that takes money and effort, and it probably would have cost them more than $9,000 in legal fees. But I think that the attorney could have at least pointed those things out and at least gotten the settlement agreement down below $9,000. I probably wouldn't have settled this case for more than $5,000, actually.
Another thing I just noticed looking at Lisa Marie's Made in Maine site is the fact that they're basically a WordPress site and they're using WooCommerce. As we've discussed on other episodes as well, these are third-party technologies that a small business is using to make their site. And this always comes back down to, if you get sued at the individual site level, any work they're doing to make fixes to improve access, a lot of that's probably stuff that is coming from WooCommerce or from WordPress. So that's another reason why, in that idea of spending the money to make the fixes, it might even be that WordPress or WooCommerce comes out with another version and Lisa Marie's going to have the same problems again. So there's also that piece too, that's just the real problem here is these tools that small businesses are using aren't accessible. And we can see that then on any small business's site made with these tools, they're going to have similar types of issues.
Okay, Thomas, that's really interesting. That's another weakness in this case. So as I'm looking over this complaint, as I mentioned, there are a number of weaknesses, but I was kind of surprised by the level of detail in the allegations. What did you think about those?
Yes, I was pleasantly surprised, if you could say something about that, about reading a demand letter or a complaint letter, but I did find that the remarks about what the barriers were much more thought through than what I'm used to seeing in a lot of other lawsuits that felt more copy and paste. And so even though this plaintiff has done apparently over 100 cases in federal court, when I go to actually what was alleged the problems were on this Lisa Marie's Made in Maine.com, I feel like just from looking at them, they show that the plaintiff really was on the site and using the specific features of that site and not just something that they cut and paste from a previous lawsuit. So from that side, I think that's a good sign that at least the violations as described look real.
I'm not surprised that there are so many very specific allegations in this complaint, because the courts have also been very clear that they really do not like copy and paste cookie cutter allegations about the specific barriers that exist on a website. And so I think that that's the reason why they went into such extreme detail on this case.
Can I agree? They did give a lot of details. Now I'm going to open the site and check out some of the items they reported to see if they're still on the site. And you know I love to do a demo, so let's look at it. First item I would like to look at is heading roles on homepage of the website were applied to the inappropriate elements. Headings such as locally made and locally sourced and featured items were redundantly indicated as headings and were attributed to the same section of the page and conveyed the same information. As a result, plaintiff could not scan the homepage quickly for the content of interest and was forced to read it in detail. So right away, this feels not copy and paste, because specifically mentioning locally made and locally sourced and featured items are specific items from that website, Lisa Marie's Made in Maine. So let's see if that still exists on the website. So here I am opening up the headings list in VoiceOver on Mac. There's only one heading named Featured Items. And locally made and locally sourced, which is heading level 2, it also looks like there's only one. For me, the way that I read that information in the complaint letter, I was under the thought that there were multiple headings with the same heading title. I don't see this on the main webpage. So that might be something they need to look at when filing the complaint. Maybe on a different page it does occur, but I just came to the homepage. So that'd be one critique of the complaint letter, is it doesn't mention a specific webpage URL where the problem occurred. But if it was me as the defendant, I would push back and say, well, my website has only one heading labeled this on my homepage. What site page were you talking about? And number two, maybe they did have different problems and they fixed it. So my point might be that they fixed some of these items after they received the complaint. So we can look at it both ways. They either fixed something, which is great, or maybe the problem occurs on a different page, which then I think should have been put into the complaint letter. Now let's look at a second example. The next item I'd like to cover is this one about interactive elements such as price filter region, pagination buttons on the product category page could not be focused with the tab key. The website did not provide helpful instructions on how to access the interactive elements using the arrow keys. Therefore, plaintiff did not know about the interactive element from the page. Well, because this was about specifically in the complaint, the plaintiff was trying to purchase a t-shirt. Here I am loading up the t-shirts page on Lisa Marie's Made in Maine. Here I am on Lisa Marie's Made in Maine website. I can tab through the items, and at the top, I'm seeing a lot of good logical focus order. Every menu item receives a tab stop, so there are a lot of tab stops to get through the page, but a screen reader user could use headings to jump past this navigation menu or use landmarks. But here I am on the search button for the website. The next tab key goes down to this color section at the bottom of the page, which says blue. And what we missed was the ability to filter by price range. So this slider control is an interactive control that needs to receive keyboard focus and is a great example from what the plaintiff sent in on the website that I agree with. The functionality for manipulating the price range, it's not available from the keyboard. I have to use the mouse to do it. So I think it's a valid item. And again, great specificity in the complaint letter. It's something that should be fixed for the website. With that, I'm not going to go into more examples because I think just from looking at them, I think that probably these examples were built from a real use case of trying to do the things on the website. I am a fan of that approach, but I do also understand that there could be more specific information that would actually help someone go and make those fixes to the website. Well, what do you all think? Why don't you give us a comment on either LinkedIn or on the Equal Entry blog page? We'll be looking to see what you think about this case and future work that we do on the Alley Insights podcast. Thanks for listening.